Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for the dog faced Herbert.
Respect is due. Miss Kobe Long.
As they say. Tar.
And thanks to Elvis for doing his stuff tonight.
Hammering, hammering, tell me what you love us. Pigeon
good day.
Put on the floor.
Off Terry.
Down. They say. off of my clouds. Hey, you, get off of my clouds.
Done this one. This is a song, it's called Rappaport's Testament, and it's taken from the words of somebody who is in a concentration camp, but it's his words and this song are about joy.
mud, but I never gave up. I never gave up. I never gave up. I crawled in the mud, but I never gave up. I never gave up. I never gave up. I crawled in the mud, but I never gave up. I never gave up. I never gave up. I crawled in the mud, but I never gave up. I never gave up. I never gave up. I crawled in the mud, but I never gave up. I never gave up. I never gave up. I crawled in the mud, but I never gave up. I never gave up. I never gave up. I crawled in the mud, but I never gave up. I never gave up. I never gave up. I crawled in the mud, but I never gave up.
Thank you very much.
While the world waited, while the world talked peace and withdrawal, Saddam Hussein dug in and moved massive forces into Kuwait. While the world waited, while Saddam stalled, more damage was being done to the fragile economies of the Third World, the emerging democracies of Eastern Europe, to the entire world, including to our own economy. The United States, together with the United Nations, exhausted every means at our disposal to bring this crisis to a peaceful end. However, Saddam clearly felt that by stalling and threatening and defying the United Nations, he could weaken the forces arrayed against him. While the world waited, Saddam Hussein met every overture of peace with open contempt. While the world prayed for peace, Saddam prepared for war. I had hoped that when the United States Congress, in historic debate, took its resolute action, Saddam would realize he could not prevail and would move out of Kuwait in accord with the United Nations resolutions. He did not do that. Instead, he remained intransigent, certain that time was on his side. Saddam was warned over and over again to comply with the will of the United Nations, leave Kuwait or be driven out. Saddam has arrogantly rejected all warnings. Instead, he tried to make this a dispute between Iraq and the United States of America. Well, he failed. Tonight, 28 nations, countries from five continents, Europe and Asia, Africa and the Arab League, have forces in the Gulf area standing shoulder to shoulder against Saddam Hussein. These countries had hoped the use of force could be avoided. Regrettably, we now believe that only force will make him leave. Prior to ordering our forces into battle, I instructed our military commanders to take every necessary step to prevail as quickly as possible, and with the greatest degree of protection possible for American and Allied servicemen and women. I've told the American people before that this will not be another Vietnam. And I repeat this here tonight. Our troops will have the best possible support in the entire world, and they will not be asked to fight with one hand tied behind their back. I'm hopeful that this fighting will not go on for long and that casualties will be held to an absolute minimum. This is an historic moment. We have in this past year made great progress in ending the long era of conflict and Cold War. We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, A world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders. We have no argument with the people of Iraq. Indeed, for the innocents caught in this conflict, I pray for their safety. Our goal is not the conquest of Iraq. It is the liberation of Kuwait. It is my hope that somehow the Iraqi people can, even now, convince their dictator that he must lay down his arms, leave Kuwait, and let Iraq itself rejoin the family of peace-loving nations. Thomas Paine wrote many years ago, "These are the times that try men's souls." Those well-known words are so very true today. But even as planes of the multinational forces attack Iraq, I prefer to think of peace, not war. I am convinced not only that we will prevail, but that out of the horror of combat will come the recognition that no nation can stand against a world united. No nation will be permitted to brutally assault its neighbor. No president can easily commit our sons and daughters to war. They are the nation's finest. Ours is an all-volunteer force, magnificently trained, highly motivated. The troops know why they're there, and listen to what they say, for they've said it better than any president or prime minister ever could. Listen to Hollywood Huddleston, Marine Lance Corporal. He says, "Let's free these people so we can go home and be free again." And he's right. The terrible crimes and tortures committed by Saddam's henchmen against the innocent people of Kuwait are an affront to mankind and a challenge to the freedom of all. Listen to one of our great officers out there, Marine Lieutenant General Walter Boomer. He said, "There are things worth fighting for. A world in which brutality and lawlessness are allowed to go unchecked isn't the kind of world we're going to want to live in." Listen to Master Sergeant J.P. Kendall of the 82nd Airborne. "We're here for more than just the price of a gallon of gas. What we're doing is going to chart the future of the world for the next 100 years. It's better to deal with this guy now than 5 years from now." And finally, we should all sit up and listen to Jackie Jones, an Army lieutenant, when she says, "If we let him get away with this, who knows what's going to be next?" I've called upon Hollywood and Walter and JP and Jackie and all their courageous comrades in arms to do what must be done. Tonight, America and the world are deeply grateful to them and to their families. And let me say to everyone listening or watching tonight, when the troops we've sent in finish their work, I'm determined to bring them home as soon as possible. Tonight, as our forces fight, they and their families are in our prayers. May God bless each and every one of them and the coalition forces at our side in the Gulf, and may he continue to bless our nation, the United States of America.
President Bush, live from the Oval Office in a 12-minute address to the nation and the world, saying at the outset his minimal demands. Saddam Hussein's forces will leave Kuwait and Iraq will comply with all relevant UN resolutions. Let's go now to Charles Jaco, who has word on airplanes in Saudi Arabia. Charles.
Yes, David. One high-ranking Saudi official has told us that he has been in touch with the highest levels in Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia. According to this information, he claims that all the planes from this first raid, Saudi and U.S. planes, have returned safely with no loss of planes and no loss of pilots. That's according to a high-ranking Saudi official here with contacts in Riyadh. King Fahd, the king of Saudi Arabia, is said to be meeting right now in Riyadh with members of his court and members of his government. I asked one Air Force officer here about the raid, how it went. Information was very hard to come by, but he would only tell me that the raid was, quote, more successful than we imagined, close quote. We can only imagine what that means. So the preliminary, and I must say these are preliminary indications we're getting here from a high-ranking Saudi official and an Air Force officer, is that the first wave of the raid on Iraq at least was successful, and that at least all the Saudi and United States planes have returned without any loss. David?
Saudi Arabia, thank you very much. The force may indeed be larger than we had been led to believe, and with word on that is our correspondent who covers world affairs for us, Ralph Begleiter. I'm sorry for that that lapse. Ralph, what have you for us?
David, according to Saudi officials, the number of Saudi planes in the air tonight was 150, joining the American fighters, and according to the Saudis, the air attacks were much more extensive than merely Baghdad. We, of course, had our reporting only from Baghdad because of the limitations of coverage in Iraq. But according to these Saudi sources, the attacks were countrywide throughout Iraq involved in the mission tonight, along with British and American forces. The Saudi sources also say that Saudi Ambassador Prince Bandar was here at the State Department this morning at 8 o'clock for a meeting with Secretary of State Baker, a very brief meeting, about 10 minutes long, during which Baker asked for the Saudi green light to go ahead with the attack today. Prince Bandar telephoned King Fahd from Baker's office itself, received the green light, gave it to Baker immediately. That was the prearranged signal that the United States and the Saudis had decided on in order to get the Saudi government on board for the attack. In fact, that was the language used by King Fahd. He said, "We are on board." In addition, we've learned that Israel was pre-notified of the attack as well through several channels. The Soviets here in Washington say they were not informed through the embassy in Washington, but presume that direct channels between Washington and Moscow were utilized for pre-notification. David?
World Affairs correspondent Ralph Begleiter, thank you very much. Reporting live from the State Department. Everyone wants us to go back to Baghdad, and so do I, where Bernard Shaw, Peter Arnett, and John Holloman have been reporting this dramatic evening. Gentlemen.
This is Bernie. We have listened to the President's address, and as he indicated in speaking, or while speaking, hostilities were going on, and indeed, we could see far off in the distance lights flashing. We could hear the bombs, and we could see the tracer fire from the anti-aircraft batteries. As I listened to President Bush tonight, it seemed to me that he was telling Saddam Hussein, "You are going to quit Kuwait." But I also heard Peter Arnett and John Holloman an implied threat to this man that the forces have gone against the nuclear plant that was a building, the forces have gone against the chemical arsenals. But I heard the President saying that we might not stop here. He did declare that this was not an invasion of Iraq. He wants to cripple this man's military capability. I should also tell you that we do not know where President Saddam Hussein is at this moment, nor do we know where other members of his government are located. I'm going to pass the microphone around because each of my colleagues has something to contribute. John Holloman.
Bernie, I think you're right about the President's message to President Saddam Hussein. It's a message of, this is it, this is the beginning of what we're going to do. I'm sure the President would like very much if President Hussein would respond right away by, you know, offering to pull out of Kuwait or something, but we'll have to wait and see what he's going to do later on. The last time we saw President Saddam Hussein was on television tonight in video that we know was at least a day old from a tour that he made of Kuwait. Excuse me. I'm now looking out the window of our bureau here, and I can tell you that off in the distance there continued to be the sounds of what appeared to me to be bombs. During the President's message, there were flashes of light from a distance probably as much as 15 or 20 miles away, probably to the south of where we are. And at this moment, there are no signs of anti-aircraft fire in the downtown Baghdad area, but there continue to be these flashes of light off in the distance to the south. Peter Arnett, your reflections.
Yes, John, I couldn't help thinking as I heard the bombs, the distant bombs, punctuating President Bush's speech, that his reference to Vietnam, this will not be another Vietnam. And I was thinking back to Vietnam, where I spent many years, to a similar raid in 1972, a B-52 strike on Hanoi. The interesting thing was that raid came at the end of the Vietnam War, near the end of the Vietnam War, and many say it helped end that war. This raid on Baghdad and elsewhere in this region tonight is at the beginning of this war, and maybe it certainly won't be a Vietnam. John?
Peter, while you were speaking, the sky lit up again with some more apparently chaff to fool Iraqi radar in the sky. There are bunches of groups of white lights and yellow lights that go through the sky and then blink out mysteriously, apparently designed to confuse the anti-aircraft guns. And at this point, the anti-aircraft guns are not firing, so if they're intended to confuse, they are not. The guns are not firing. Well, as I speak, off in the distance, I see some anti-aircraft fire is going up pretty far away from our location, and you might be able in the background to hear some of that out the window. Bernie Shaw is back again, and then we want to talk to someone who's just come up from the shelters downstairs. We'll brief our loved ones about how things are there. Bernie?
Yes, I was just, Ingrid has been sitting here on the floor. I don't know how you managed to get past those guards and make that long hike up those 14 stories that I made about an hour ago. But what is the situation in the bomb shelter? And Ingrid, you know all of the members of the press corps, the other American networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, they've been highly concerned about their people. So take your time now and give us a fill on what the situation is in the bomb shelter.
Well, what you can see from up here, you can hear down in the shelter is low, very low and quiet thumps. There was a little bit of confusion at the beginning. The press went down there, other hotel guests, hotel employees who also live in a compound nearby. A number of mothers and their children at a certain time, perhaps half an hour after the attack started, you heard chants of down, down Bush, so we even had a little demonstration down near the shelter. The interesting thing was that some of the government guys that accompany us during the day when we try and work, and some of the hotel security people are walking around with Kalashnikovs and gas masks, which is something that was a little bit of a surprise to see. And I did see a lot of our colleagues down there, some of them who had been up on higher floors taking pictures, and they were taken by security people downstairs to their shelter, ostensibly for our own protection. Bernie?
And what is the mood of the people in the shelter?
Well, it's actually quieted down a lot. The confusion has ceased. Some of the people have gone to sleep. There's still a lot of milling around. The people are trying to get the BBC or anything to know what's going on in the outside world. There's a lot of questions about what's going on in Kuwait, Jordan, Israel, other spots that may be involved, and people are very curious to come above ground, waiting for daylight just to see what has happened.
Even in the midst of these raids around the Baghdad, life goes on, and as incredible as it sounded incredible to my ears, John Holloman, a rooster crowing about 20 minutes ago as the bombs were going off out there over the horizon. Very strange sound.
I'll say, Bernie, and it's a long time before sunrise here. It's still a couple of hours before we're going to see the first rays of sunlight off to the east, but this rooster was obviously confused by all the military hardware arrayed and displayed in the skies of Baghdad. I'm going to, Peter Arnett standing by to talk to us some more, but I'm just going to look out the window once before I give the microphone to Peter. It's you can still see flashes in the sky, but still, strangely, eerily, there are no fires, which is an indication. President Bush said in his speech that they were not attacking civilian targets here. They were attacking specific military targets, and it appears that's correct from everything we can observe from our window.
Well, thank you, John. By my watch in this dim light of this hotel room, this raid, these series of raids have been going on for about 2 hours and 50 minutes. They began at around 2:30 Baghdad time. In the center of the city, the government installations or installations of one kind or another, maybe anti-aircraft, strategic communication centers, began in the center and stayed in this particular part of town for about an hour and a half.
The staff will take just a very few questions. As I'm sure you can understand, they're very busy, so they will have time to take just a few questions, and then they will be on their way. So with that, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you very much, Pete. Ladies and gentlemen, I know you all heard the speech a short time ago by the President. And while there is not a great deal we can add now, we did want to be as forthcoming as we can with you. At 7 o'clock tonight, as you all know by now, Eastern Time, 3 o'clock Thursday morning in the Gulf, the armed forces of the United States began an operation at the direction of the President to force Saddam Hussein to withdraw his troops from Kuwait and to end his occupation of that country. At the direction of the President, I signed the execute order yesterday afternoon to undertake this operation, subject to certain conditions. It was to begin only after we'd met the terms of the resolution passed last Saturday by the Congress. Those conditions have been complied with and proper notice has been given as required. And the operation was not to take place if there had been any last-minute diplomatic breakthroughs. The operation underway tonight, taking place in the pre-dawn darkness of the Persian Gulf, involves Allied air forces of four nations: the United States, the United Kingdom, Saudi Arabia, and Kuwait. As they undertake their missions, they do so after months of careful planning. At the direction of the President, great care has been taken to focus on military targets, to minimize U.S. casualties, and to do everything possible to avoid injury to civilians in Iraq and Kuwait. The targets being struck tonight are located throughout Iraq and Kuwait. Our focus is on the destruction of Saddam Hussein's offensive military capabilities, the very capabilities that he used to seize control of Kuwait and that make him a continuing threat to the nations of the Middle East. These are the same capabilities that now threaten American and allied forces in the Gulf. Our goal, the same one we have maintained throughout Operation Desert Shield, is to liberate Kuwait and enforce the resolutions of the UN Security Council. This portion of the campaign, directed against Saddam Hussein's offensive military force, is an enormously complex undertaking. It involves all of the services of the United States military and hundreds of U.S. and allied aircraft. It is an ongoing operation, and we must therefore limit the kind and the amount of information that we provide in these early stages. This obviously is different from what happened in Panama in December of 1989, where most of the operation was over by the morning of the first day. We understand your need for information about what will happen next, and we are well aware of our obligation to keep the American people informed. But you must also understand that we cannot talk about future operations without putting at risk the safety of those who will have to carry them out. I believe I can speak for all of us at the Pentagon tonight when I say that we had hoped to settle this matter peacefully. This has clearly been an agonizing decision for the President and the Congress of the United States. And we've reached the point of committing our forces to battle very reluctantly, only after the most careful consideration.
Half hours old, so I'm not quite prepared to take on your second question. So far, there has been no air resistance.
Can you tell us if there's been any casualties so far?
We will, at the appropriate time, be releasing information on casualties. We're not prepared to release any specifics now. I will simply say that the preliminary reports we have received in terms of the success of the operation, and that includes the possibility of casualties, have been very, very encouraging. The operation appears to have gone very well.
What can you tell us about the Scud missiles that have been reportedly launched by Iraq?
There have been a number of reports of Scud missiles, but insofar as I am aware, they basically are false reports. General Pound, I want to say
this. Run down on the types of aircrafts and numbers that were involved in the raids.
I really can't at this time because it is an ongoing operation. Let me just say that it involved the air forces mentioned by Secretary Cheney and sorties in the hundreds.
Were there cruise missiles involved with that?
I won't comment on specific weaponry. It's an ongoing operation.
What targets were we bombing near Baghdad, and have we bombed any facilities where we think Saddam Hussein might do?
We have not been targeting Mr. Saddam Hussein. The purpose of our bombing facilities in the area of Baghdad is essentially to go after the command and control system of the Iraqi armed forces. And we're looking at principally military targets, command and control installations, air defense sites that could put our planes at risk, but they are militarily oriented targets.
Are there any Iraqi response of any kind?
The response of
The Iraqi forces at this point has been limited, I think would be the best way to characterize it. But again, let me emphasize, as General Powell did, we are in the very early stages of this operation. It is likely to run for a long period of time. I realize you've all got legitimate questions about it, but there simply are things we do not know yet, because it is an ongoing operation, because pilots are just now returning, and there'll be a lot of work required to assess the success of the initial efforts, and there'll be a lot of follow-up work required as well.
Could you tell us, please, whether or not there have been any indications whatsoever that the Iraqi troops, the 540,000 Iraqi troops in the Kuwaiti theater, have been cut off from their command and control headquarters in Baghdad?
I wouldn't want to speculate on that at this point, Wolf.
Mr. Secretary, can I follow up, please? Sure. Can I follow up? The President said this was strictly an air operation for the time being. When does the U.S. decide to send in the ground forces?
It is strictly an air operation for the time being, and I wouldn't want to speculate on the point at which additional forces might be engaged.
Have you talked to Senator with any Navy?
Abdul Aziz Larat said on the McNeil Air News Hour this evening that we are, quote, now prisoners of our own country, in our own country. Now that we've defended ourselves from naked aggression in the Middle East, how do we defend ourselves here at home from terrorist attacks?
I'm confident that we can deal with the terrorist threat.
U.S. Air Force attack and bomber aircraft included F-15E Strike Eagles, F-16 Fighting Falcons, F-4G Wild Weasels, A-10 Thunderbolts, F-111s, F-117 Stealth Fighters, and B-52s. Naval and Marine aircraft included F-18 Hornets, AV-8 Harriers, A-7s, and A-6s. Additionally, United States Army AH-64 Apache attack helicopters also took part in the operation. These aircraft delivered both guided and unguided munitions. Also, Navy ships launched conventional Tomahawk cruise missiles during the entire operation. Although we can't discuss specifics on either targeting or mission results, our first indications are very encouraging. Command and control for the operation is provided by AWACS aircraft, the E-3A Sentry and the E-2C Hawkeye. Protecting all coalition aircraft from Iraqi interceptors were U.S. Air Force F-15 Eagles, U.S. Navy F-14 Tomahawks, and U.S. Marine F-18 Hornets. These aircraft provided air cover during all phases of this operation, including escort into and out of the target area. Additionally, Air Force EF-111s and Navy EA-6s provided electronic combat support. Supporting this massive effort were air refueling aircraft that included Air Force KC-10s and KC-135s, Navy A-6s, and air refueling aircraft from the French Air Force. French Jaguar fighter-bomber aircraft also participated in operations on day one. As we stated earlier, Iraqi response has been limited, and we have received no reports of Iraqi Scud missile launches. However, the U.S. Embassy strongly urges all American citizens in Saudi Arabia to remain at home or place of work until the situation clarifies. The American Embassy is open 24 hours a day and is closely monitoring the situation. I would like to reiterate the goals of the President for this campaign. They are to have Iraq leave Kuwait and comply with all associated UN resolutions, to restore the legitimate government of Kuwait